so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
And the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, August the 23rd, 2019. I'm your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Elise Jacobson.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on the show today, Elise. We have a variety of issues that we will be discussing on today's show. Earlier this week on Monday, headlines were made when a group of animal activists near Toronto raided a Maple Leaf Foods chicken slaughterhouse and put the facility on lockdown for 6 hours while negotiations were trying to be made. Ultimately, the lives of four beings on death row were saved, and this takeover furthers the public discussion of the urgency of putting animal rights issues into the public. Our friend, Toronto-based activist Jenny McQueen, played a key role in this action, and she will be here today to tell her story. And for our feature interview, we'll have former conservation officer Bryce Cassavant on the show. So far this year in BC, there have been historic highs of bear sightings within urban environments, and thus the killing of bears by conservation officers has increased as well. I'm sure that our regular listeners and Lower Main Mainland residents are well aware of the latest controversial incident that saw a mother bear and her two cubs being killed by a conservation officer in a Coquitlam neighborhood on July the 30th. Three human residents of the area were charged with obstruction of the Wildlife Act because they intervened to try to stop the officer from killing. In this interview with bear advocate Bryce, we learn more about these issues and how we, as humans, can harmoniously live among the bears as we encroach upon their territory? Or does it always have to end with a shooting, as we've publicly already seen several times in these past few months? I would hope not. That interview is coming up in about 37 minutes, so please do stay tuned. Well, as we've been seeing with the slaughterhouse takedown in Toronto just last week, plus a number of other public disruptive actions in the name of the animal rights movement last weekend at the Animal Liberation Toronto Conference, I think we are actually experiencing a period of time where the convergence of people around the world who care and who wish to act against the exploitation of animals has come to a high, or maybe the numbers will go higher. We don't know. Just last Saturday, actually, the official Animal Rights March took place in numerous cities around the globe, including in Toronto last weekend, where 1,000 people took over the streets of downtown Toronto to bring awareness of the urgency of animal liberation in a world that breeds millions upon millions of animals every year to eat, to wear, to test on, and to suffer. This must not go on, and I really think that as animal advocates are converging together in these large teams, they are learning from each other, and then they take that knowledge and training back to their homes and replicate the public activism where they live in their own cities. I've seen this take place when I attended the Animal Liberation Conference in Berkeley, California last year. We had over 1,000 people there, and we received training on how to conduct these public disruptions, on how to do a 1,000 person march and a 100 person cube. It was amazing. And yeah, I know there were over 1,000 people there last year, and even more this year. I wish I could have attended this year.
Yeah.
So now, how do you think the public has been responding when perhaps they can't get around, when traffic is stopped because of activists in a huge march, or they're annoyed to see activists disrupting the status quo at places where they do business, like grocery shopping or clothing stores? They may seem benign, but these are places where animal exploitation is an ongoing daily thing, but is largely ignored. I like the article that Jessica Scott Reed wrote for the Toronto Star earlier this week, which we have posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and it's also on our website at animalvoices.org. In this article, based on the actions taking place in Toronto last weekend, she asks, were you annoyed by animal rights activists at some point over the past few days? If so, we've succeeded. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that, Elise? To me, I'm going to ask you first because you haven't talked much yet.
Oh, yeah.
Say how I feel about it when I read something like that. I feel pride.
What yeah, feel? No, I absolutely agree with her. I think, you know, social change is never convenient for people in power. I feel like any time there are protests happening for any sort of social change, whether it's animal liberation or I'm thinking about, you know, all the protests that have happened in the last couple of years for the Black Lives Matter movement, people have always complained about, oh, this, you know, these protesters are disrupting my commute or, you know, they're getting in my way for this or that thing that I'm trying to go about my business doing. And that's kind of the entire point, you
exactly.
know, you have to like, if you want to make change, it has to be in people's faces and, you know, nobody's going to think about it or take it seriously if it's just something in the background that they don't have to deal with, they're not confronted with.
Exactly. Jessica says of the increasing public disruptions, the very point is to interrupt public life, your everyday doings, the norm, to bring your attention to the 800 million farmed animals, 3 million fur-bearing animals, and countless marine animals slaughtered unnecessarily in Canada each year. Now, I've been a participant of many public disruptions, but I want to hear about your experiences in doing disruptions.
Yeah, I have a few memories. I've been part of a couple that were really powerful. One that I recall doing a few years ago, it was a big group of us, probably at least 50 people or so. And what we did was we took over the intersection at Cambie and Broadway, which for anyone who doesn't live in Vancouver, that's kind of a main central intersection in town. It's very busy. And yeah, we basically went out into the middle of the intersection, stood in a big circle with signs and, you know, stopped traffic. And obviously people were upset. A lot of people were honking and yelling.
I vaguely remember that action.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
But it was powerful. I mean, the energy was palpable. It was amazing. And it was kind of like, yeah, you know, we made it so we were literally blocking people from going where they had to go. And, you know, like people had no choice but to listen to what we were saying, you know, our message for animal liberation. It was just for, you know, a couple of minutes. It wasn't a long time, but it was enough that I think it kind of made an impact.
That reminds me of the March to Close All Slaughterhouses here in Vancouver several months ago that I've been in every year, even before it was called that, mm-hmm. for, I would say it's been a duration of maybe eight-ish years by now. And every year we have more and more people attending. So at this year's March, I think there were about 400 people. We took over the streets of downtown Vancouver. We had a very long route, as we've had in the past. A lot of chanting, a lot of sign holding, a lot of traffic jamming. But we had the police as escorts. They were on our side supporting us for safety, and I appreciated that myself. But then at the end of this march, someone had a little trick up their sleeve. So it was announced at the end of the march that whoever wanted to, because Canada Goose store is right there where we were, why shouldn't we pay them a visit? Because in prior months, we had done actually a similar march, but it was an anti-fur march. And it was in the evening. It was in the winter, so it was getting dark. And we marched through downtown Vancouver, stopping off at all the fur stores along our route to do disruptions, to do chanting and protesting. And then we ended up in the mall at Pacific Center for our main target, which is Canada Goose, because they so inhumanely kill their animals and exploit them and mm-hmm. lie about it too. And just recently they have taken lies off their websites.
That's
talking
right.
about the humane way that they capture their captive coyotes for fur that are in the wild.
I read about that. They pulled all those claims, which is interesting.
Because they have to. So this is the pressure that is happening when activists get out there. And we stormed the mall both on both of those marches, and I have to say it felt pretty good to let Canada Goose know. They were very outnumbered by us. They had a few security guards, and they couldn't stop us. So I want to move on now, and speaking of convergences where people get together and they learn from each other and they network and they make friends and then they go on to work with each other later on, this is why I like to spend the National Animal Rights Conference every year, either in D.C. or L.A., and the annual conference just took place about 3 weeks ago, ending at the end of July. It was July 25th to 28th, so that's why I wasn't here that week. I'm sure you missed me, all the listeners, because I was going and doing my research and seeing what's new out there. And what I do like about attending this conference every single year is that I learn so much every time I go there. There are always new campaigns, new organizations from all over the world that are tackling issues for animal advocacy. And as you know, there's just so many issues to tackle, right? This is an all over animal rights. So not just food animals, all animals used in our society who are ultimately exploited. And, you know, it's not just the animal advocates to attend. I believe we had about 1,600 people there this year, I was told. Did you know, though, that we always have a contingency of perhaps undercover members who are from the animal agriculture industry that always attend these conferences?
Right, I've heard. Yes. Yeah, very interesting.
And, you know, it's a known thing, and every year I have always tried to spot the non-vegans in the room. How can you tell? Or the spies, how well are they disguised? Anyways, they always come out with some sort of reporting, which I always find very amusing, after their experiences to share with the animal agriculture industry. This is usually in the States, about what their findings were as being a secret spy at this conference. So here are a couple of the things. We're almost out of time here, so I'll just briefly mention them. So they said animal rights extremists are becoming increasingly aggressive in their efforts to end animal agriculture. And as we know from our discussion just right now on the growing of just public disruptions, that is true. Another thing they said in the report was similar to last year's conference. Speakers made it clear their vision is animal liberation, not promoting animal welfare. That is true as well. And I have to say that in the past, we've been going for about 10 years now, this conference, which is organized by Farm Animal Rights Movement, and sponsored by some big nonprofits in animal advocacy, I have seen it changed over the years where, you know, there were campaigns before about having larger cages for pigs, but now we're speaking about no cages and animal liberation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess I will stop now. One more thing is speakers also focused on the use of undercover videos in the media to damage the reputation of animal agriculture and reach, quote unquote, their goals. What are our goals? Animal liberation. Absolutely. When do we want it? Now. Yeah. So all in all, I'm seeing a growth of animal advocates raising numbers, and I feel that the sense of urgency towards animal compassion and environmental issues is growing. The Amazon is literally burning right now. It's time for us to step up, and I invite each of our listeners, no matter who you are, to please join the animal rights movement. It's the greatest social justice movement of our time, and you can take pride being on the right side of history starting now. And speaking of the Amazon, Elise.
Yes, that's the story on everyone's minds this week. Global News reports that the Amazon rainforest, the vessel holding a massive amount of the world's oxygen, is burning at a rate scientists have never seen before. Brazil's National Institute for Space Research, or the INPE, has recorded more than 74,000 fires in the Amazon so far this year, an 84% increase from last year. The Amazon is regarded as vital in the fight against global warming due to its ability to absorb carbon from the air. It's often referred to as the lungs of the earth, as more than 20% of the world's oxygen is produced there. So obviously vitally important, not only for South America, but for the entire world. Brazil has the biggest share of the 670 million hectares of forest, or 60%, which is home to more species than anywhere else on the planet. But unlike other ecosystems, scientists say the wildfires burning in the Amazon are not natural. Deforestation is considered the major contributing factor, behind the alarming numbers. Environmentalists have also placed blame on President Jair Bolsonaro, saying his policies have only threatened the forest more. While wildfires in the Amazon are not entirely uncommon, the way they are spreading is driving concern. While drought can be a factor in rainforest fires, INPE researchers have said there is nothing abnormal about the climate or rainfall amounts in the Amazon this year. INPE researcher Alberto Setzer told Reuters, quote, "The dry season creates the favorable conditions for the use and spread of fire, but starting a fire is the work of humans, whether deliberately or by accident," end quote. Human activities, namely farming, mining, and drilling, are what scientists say are exacerbating the situation now. And this part, which is very relevant to Animal Voices, in Brazil, cattle farmers start fires deliberately to clear forests to make way for ranching, and it's not always legal. I think that's very important to note. Brazil exports a ton of meat around the world every year. Animal agriculture, particularly cattle farming, is the number one driver of Amazon deforestation. I think it's been responsible for 91% of total deforestation by this point, so it's very important to note. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that more than a quarter of the Amazon will be without trees by 2030 if the current rate of deforestation continues. The fears surrounding deforestation have grown under Bolsonaro, who has vowed to develop the region for farming and mining since coming into office, ignoring international concern over deforestation and climate change. Data from the INPE suggests that since he took power in January, deforestation numbers have soared. Other countries working to fight climate change have started to take notice. Norway and Germany have pulled out of funding for projects to quell deforestation in Brazil. Environmental groups have also not shied away from firing back at Bolsonaro. Greenpeace called the president and his government, quote, "a threat to the climate equilibrium," and warned that Brazil would shoulder a heavy cost to its economy under his policies. So there's a lot to think about here. Obviously, this is extremely disturbing. And, you know, it's a complex problem. There are a lot of things mm-hmm. causing it. But again, I think we can't ignore the role that animal agriculture plays, not only cattle farming, but also growing soybeans for animal feed. The soybeans not only feed cows, but also pigs, chickens, and other farmed animals. So it's all kind of connected. Those are the major drivers of deforestation there. And especially imported meat from Brazil, like from Amazon deforestation, is often found, for example, in fast food hamburgers in general. So that's just really something to think about if you're
a great reason not to eat meat if it's yeah. being imported from Brazil. I mean, it's bad enough to eat any meat, but mm-hmm. that doesn't sit well with me that takes up so much in carbon emissions to bring that here.
Yeah,
but not even that. We're speaking about the rainforest here, right. And it's being let to burn down by their president. He knows about it,
yeah,
and he comes off as saying he's quoted as saying something just like, oh yeah, we know it's happening and it's we just don't do anything about it,
right?
Really, like excuse me,
he's more interested,
you're the president of the Amazon,
Brazil, yeah, he's more interested in catering to corporations and
horrible
profit and
horrible,
yeah.
Thank you for that news. This is a big news story for this week, and
sure.
Keep in touch on our Facebook pages. We've been making updates on it there.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
On today's show, we welcome back fearless animal activist Jenny McQueen, who is based in Toronto, Canada, and a member of Direct Action Everywhere Toronto, as well as all the other Toronto animal activism groups. It's always great to check in to see what's happening in the dynamic and well-organized Toronto animal activism scene. There is always something taking place, and this past week it was the Animal Liberation Toronto Conference that was hosted over the course of 4 days from last Friday until this Monday, with attendees really coming from all around, even from Vancouver in the U.S. There were many actions planned for participants, such as the official animal rights march of 1,000 activists stopping traffic in downtown Toronto, and a visit to the home of the CEO of Fearman's Pork, now known as the Palace that Dead Pigs Built. Jenny is an instrumental part of the Toronto activism scene and joins us today to speak about this Monday's lockdown of a maple leaf slaughterhouse near Toronto, where the intention was to disrupt business for the day, but they also saved some lives as well. Welcome once again to the Animal Voices Show, Jenny.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us on the show today. I know you are very busy with getting ready for a trip. We thank you for always making yourself available to keep our listeners updated with relevant animal rights news across Canada. To start, can you please tell us about the slaughterhouse takedown at Maple Leaf Foods earlier this week? I just watched the summarized 9-minute video of it, which can be seen on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And I would love to hear about it from you, as you were actually there at the slaughterhouse experiencing it with all the senses that we can't experience in video. So what happened that day, Jenny?
Absolutely. It was a very dramatic action that we had carefully planned to go in to stop the operations of a chicken slaughterhouse, to liberate some animals. And at the same time, a street blockade was happening nearby, almost like a diversion.
Wow. Okay. So what I saw was it was a chicken slaughterhouse. There were some chickens who were rescued, while at the same time, I think there was another group working to basically have some activists actually locked down at the slaughterhouse, so that I think the intention was to disrupt the business there for the day. Can you tell us about these two different actions that were going on and what resulted from them?
Yeah, we'd formed ourselves into different teams, a red team and a green team, and a blockade team. So we trained very carefully for these actions. We trained in how to lock ourselves up so we couldn't be easily taken away by the police. We trained in how to liberate the chickens if we tried to do negotiations and they failed, then we knew that we would actually have liberated some chickens. And we had teams and people assigned very carefully different roles. So we started very early in the morning, and then we walked to the car park adjacent to the slaughterhouse. We had a van parked there. We got out all the materials that we needed, and then we walked through the open huge gates at the slaughterhouse where the trucks enter. We were met by workers, but we basically walked right through them to their protests. We quickly went to the entrance of the slaughterhouse where there was a great big truck filled with the crates where the chickens are crammed inside. And we had started to lock ourselves down, which involved making concrete, pouring concrete into the container that we were locked into and inserting our arms into the pipes that we were locked into. So four ladies, myself included, locked ourselves, and then we had a huge support team around us, keeping us safe. And then at the same time, another portion of the red team went off to liberate the chickens, and I'd very much encourage people to watch the video. It's extremely dramatic, and it's extremely heartening to see how focused our team was as they were cutting away the crates to liberate the actual chickens.
Yeah, I just love to see the power that can be harnessed by the actions of organized and peaceful individuals, and it just is really, it's inspiring to me as to what can be done. Now, I'm wondering, did this whole devised plan, did it all work as planned?
Well, we did have demands. Some of them obviously could not be met, would not be met by Maple Leaf Foods. We did want them to think about transitioning to plant-based proteins, which is something that should be really straightforward. Lentils and pea protein grows very well in Canada. So that is one of the demands, as well as stopping the construction of the new slaughterhouse in London, Ontario. But then the third demand was to release more chickens, and we were disappointed. We were very disappointed that these demands didn't seem to be considered. But at the same time, we were relieved in a way, I guess, that we had no criminal charges for our action. We were there for 6 hours, locked down. And we had a negotiating team, which Dan, from the retired RCMP officer, Dan, well known in the West
Dan
Coast.
Dan Moskalek, yeah.
Yes, he negotiated on with us as part of the Red Team. And he was successful in having no criminal charges. So at the end, we decided, okay, we've done as much as we can. We've rescued four chickens, and we then decided to release ourselves.
And it made a lot of media as well. So I have to say that was probably one of your intentions, and that was definitely, you succeeded in that. This is a stand for justice, regardless of you locking yourselves down and rescuing chickens. It's a statement that says that we're disrupting the industry because this is not okay to kill animals this way. And
absolutely.
I can't even believe they're opening another slaughterhouse. I think that's a really backwards idea. So I witnessed those four sweet young chickens being liberated from their holding crates and then passed over the fence barricading the slaughterhouse to their safety. Can you tell us a bit about what their history would have been until this week, and how are they doing now?
Right, so these are, air quotes, meat chickens. So their life prior to this would have been scratching around on a floor in a big white shed, which would have been covered with their own feces, and they would have been having their feathers burnt off by the acid created in the flooring. And then they would have been roughly violently gathered up and crammed into the crates that transport them on the truck, with no consideration as to whether they are being injured as they are being forced into the crates. You might say this is all welfarist considerations, but I think it's important for the public to know how chickens are one of the most abused animals on the planet. So then they would have arrived at the slaughterhouse, and then they would have been violently ripped again from the crates. They would have been hung upside down by their feet, and then they would have entered this absolutely horrendous slaughter system. So these four young chickens were saved from that fate, and I'm really glad to report that they were delivered safely to a new home, to a new loving home, which I will not disclose to the general public because, we don't want their safety to be compromised.
Well, I'm just glad that they were taken by loving people. You know, I know some of the people who are taking those chickens, and I wish it was me, because what a happy story to be able to liberate these lives, these poor young chickens who were kept in terrible conditions until this time of slaughter, just about after 5 weeks of living, and and then being sent straight to slaughter. I have seen those chickens been sent to the slaughterhouse many, many times, and I have unfortunately seen them also in the next step when they've been now hanging down upside down with their throat slits. It's just so unnecessary, and that's a statement as well, is showing them as ambassadors who are now being rescued, even though all their brothers and sisters couldn't be. But that's a place where we have to start, at least. So I read the article in the Star that was authored by Jessica Scott Reed this week, in which she asks the public if they were annoyed by animal activists this past weekend, as they made several disruptions throughout the city that stopped traffic and may have impeded on the activities for their weekend. That's what you were involved with. So what do you have to say about the activism of disruptions, especially in such a large city of Toronto, where the opportunities to disrupt the animal exploitation business are many, as are the activists who are dedicated to moving the animal rights
rights movement forth very quickly by getting out in the city this way to directly engage with the public by putting animal exploitation issues out there front and center so that they can no longer be ignored.
Oh, it was a fantastic opportunity to make a statement. Usually we have events, I don't know, maybe once a week, once every couple of weeks that perhaps make, if we're lucky, make the headlines. But this time it was bang, 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 you know, like headline after headline. The Eaton Centre disruption was very impactful for many, many people, and that made a lot of headlines.
So I saw a little bit of that. What I saw was that Edens were actually shutting down their doorways and trapping customers inside, which has happened here at the Pacific Center Mall downtown when we were trying to do that as a fur protest. So what happened with that, because that's all I saw in the video, is that you couldn't get in, but what came out of that action?
Well, we saw that all the doors had been locked. So there's a bridge that goes over the main road.
Oh, right. So you were locked in there.
Yes, because we'd gone into the stores opposite and then we'd gone up onto the bridge to get into the Eaton Centre. So they locked the doors to the Eaton Centre. And then we ran back to the store that we'd come from and they'd locked the door there as well. So we were locked on this skywalk above a busy road. And we just took advantage of the situation. We put our banners to the window. You know, I think a couple of members of public were trapped in there with us as well. But I said, let's take advantage of this. We'll just spread on social media. So we did speak outs. We were chanting. We had an Indigenous beautiful activist tell us about her opinion of the fur trade, because all of this was a campaign for a fur-free Toronto. So we had our huge letters, Ban Fur, which we had facing the public, facing the drivers, and we just took advantage of the situation when the police came. And I negotiated with the police to get us out. And we were so, so pleased. Members of the public were cheering us on, chanting, let them free. We were chanting, set us free. And then, unfortunately, things really kind of spiraled out of control and the police became extremely rough. And that was very disappointing.
Wow. That part I didn't see. I did see the part where the public below were chanting, let them free, because you were obviously locked in the space against your own will. Well, live and learn. They're going to have to learn how to deal with these situations better in the future, because I don't think you're stopping anytime soon. Thank you, Toronto-based activist Jenny McQueen, for coming on the show again to give us an update on the disruption events that took place this past weekend as part of the Animal Liberation Toronto Conference. To learn more about Jenny's work and to connect with the activism scene in Toronto, there's a few places you can go. I recommend checking out the group's Direct Action Everywhere on Facebook, as well as Grass Toronto and Liberation TO. It's time now to get active for the animals because they need all the help they can get. Any final resources we should check out for our listeners?
Absolutely. You just missed the SAVE movement.
Oh, of course. So, I missed the whole movement.
That's okay. And also Animal Rights Toronto. We're an umbrella organization that has events from all of these organizations. We try and keep a calendar of events up to date.
That's amazing. We sort of have a similar network here in Vancouver where all the groups, they get together to make sure that we are not having overlapping events, because that was starting to happen a few years ago because we're just getting so active here in Vancouver as well. When I was in Toronto in April, if you remember that day, my first disruption of the day was with you. We actually did two. And then there was a giant cube of truth downtown. And then right after that, we did a disruption at that ethical butcher place down the street. And then there was something happening after that as well, but I had to get on my plane to the airport. What a day I chose to have a one-day stay in Toronto.
You know what? There's just so many activities now, animal rights events, that we try and avoid overlap, but a lot of times we are overlapping. But we find that the community now is big enough to accommodate that.
Right. Well, yeah. If our listeners are anywhere near Toronto or Ontario or even visiting like I did, please get connected. If you are Or if you're listening locally in Vancouver, get connected with the animal rights scene in Vancouver as well. And you can, you know, just check out our Facebook page because we're always posting stuff that's happening here locally, which is a lot these days. Thanks again, Jenny. Good luck on your travel to New York today. And I look forward to keeping in touch with you in the future.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Allison.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
We have some events to share with you today. Coming up later today, Friday, August 23rd, 6 to 9 p.m. at the corner of West Georgia and Granville Street. It's the Cube of Truth with Anonymous for the Voiceless. They ask that you please meet promptly at 6 p.m. on the corner of West Georgia and Granville Street for an important briefing. If you're interested in volunteering, please join the AV Vancouver Canada group on Facebook. The Cube of Truth is a peaceful, static demonstration akin to an art performance. This demonstration operates in a structured manner that triggers curiosity and interest from the public. We attempt to lead bystanders to a vegan conclusion through a combination of local standard practice animal exploitation footage and conversations with a value-based approach. Masks, signs, and outreach literature are provided. Black upper clothing appropriate for the weather is essential, and please bring a fully charged laptop or tablet if you have one. See their Facebook event page for the files to download. Again, that's Anonymous for the Voiceless Vancouver that you want to get in touch with if you're interested in joining them. And next Friday, August 30th, 1 to 2 p.m. at 1790 Beach Avenue in Vancouver, it's Food Empowerment Project's Fight for the Ocean Day. In honor of Dr. Sylvia Earle, FEP declares August 30th as Fight for the Ocean Day. Grab your reusable water bottle and join us for a day of cleaning one of our local beaches. Trash harms our oceans and the sea creatures who call it home. We will meet on the beach in front of Cactus Club. Please bring gloves, tongs, and a bucket. Extra bags will be provided. And they emphasize, please wear a hat and dress appropriately for the weather. So again, that's next Friday, the 30th, 1 to 2 p.m. Meet at 1790 Beach Avenue in Vancouver. And on Saturday, August 31st, from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., at the Nikkei National Museum and Cultural Center in Burnaby, it's Sea Shepherd Vancouver's Taiji Dolphin Information Event. In just a few weeks, the dolphin hunting season will begin in Taiji, Japan. During the six-month period, dolphin hunters utilize drive hunt techniques to force large numbers of dolphins and pilot whales to shore in the cove to capture for display or slaughter. Families are brutally torn apart or massacred in this annual event. Sea Shepherd has always documented these drives in order to educate the public about their brutal existence and the link to the captive display industry. Many people in Japan are unaware of the existence of these drives. As part of our ongoing education campaign, we are taking the information to Japanese citizens and expats at the Japanese festival so that they may share this knowledge with friends and family back in Japan. Pressure from Japanese citizens is crucial to ending these greed-fueled slaughters. So once again, that is Sea Shepherd's Taiji Dolphin Information Event next Saturday, August 31st, 12 to 2 p.m. at the Nikkei National Museum in Burnaby. And then looking ahead, Thursday, September 12th, from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Waldorf, it's the fifth vegan night market. There will be food trucks, vendors, drinks, apparel, indoor and outdoor live music, bath and body products, pottery, jewelry, animal nonprofits, and more. Admission is a minimum $2 donation, with proceeds going to Little Oink Bank Pig Sanctuary, or canned food, pet food, clothing, and toiletries for Wish Drop-In Center Society. This event is 19 plus inside and all ages outside.
And it's very, very popular. At the beginning. My tip, so that you don't have to wait outside in line.
Right. Yeah, the last time I went, it was extremely crowded. Actually, a lot of people go, but it's fun. There's lots of great stuff to sample there and, you know, lots of wonderful things. So again, that's on Thursday, September 12th, 6 to 10 p.m. at the Waldorf. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like us to announce on the show, shoot us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
On today's show, we have Bryce Cassavant, the former BC conservation officer, who in 2015 was suspended after he refused to kill two black bear cubs near Port Hardy on the northern tip of Vancouver Island. The bear cub's mother was killed by Bryce after she repeatedly raided a freezer full of meat and salmon, but despite an order to kill the cubs as well, Bryce took them to a veterinary hospital instead, believing they could be rehabilitated. Bryce followed the law and stood up for BC's wildlife. His actions inspire a dialogue about the sustainable conservation and safe treatment of animals in British Columbia. The cubs he saved were released back into the wild in 2016, where they continue to grow and thrive. Today, Bryce is focusing on his doctoral studies at Royal Roads University, being an advocate for the environment in his community, and he is an active bear advocate as well. So far this year in BC, there have been historic highs of bear counts within urban environments, and thus the killing of bears by conservation officers has increased as well. The spotlight is on bear conservation issues and how we as humans can harmoniously live among the bears as we encroach our residences into their territory. Or do they always have to be shot and killed by the conservation officer service, as we have already seen happen many times in the past few months alone? We're looking for solutions, and hopefully we'll have some with Bryce here today. Hi, Bryce, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
Yes, to start, as we know, there's been a lot of media attention this summer around the mother bear and her cubs who were killed in the lower mainland city of Coquitlam about 3 weeks ago on July 30th. For our listeners who haven't heard the story yet, can you give us an overview of what happened that day?
For sure. On July 30th of this year, a conservation officer was chasing a mother bear and her two cubs, and they were cubs of the year, meaning they were born this spring, in a neighborhood of Coquitlam. There were three individuals who were expressing concern at the time and also filming the conservation officer's actions. The conservation officer subsequently killed the mother bear and her two cubs and arrested the three individuals who were verbally expressing their concern and filming him, and they were arrested for allegedly obstruction.
Right. So Elise has a question for you here.
Hi, Bryce. Elise here. You have organized a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for the legal costs of these people who were arrested for reportedly obstructing efforts to deal with this situation. Can you tell us more about why these funds will be needed to protect these citizens who were simply speaking up for the animals?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Elise. It's actually a very interesting legal case. Obstruction has very strict parameters on what obstruction is and is not in Canada. And here we have a situation where the conservation officer has alleged not just obstruction under the Wildlife Act, but criminal obstruction under the Criminal Code of Canada, which is, in my view, a very high threshold to meet. And it's because of the manner in which the allegation was made by the conservation officer, the defense of the parties is going to be expensive and very time-consuming.
So I have a question here as well with I don't know exactly how many bears have been killed in urban settings in British Columbia this year. I saw something that said it had been 50 as of June, but we know that there's been more since then. There's been also a huge spike in bear sightings in BC this year alone as compared to last year. Do you have any insights on why this is?
I do. Let's deal with the first issue of numbers and stats. The number of 50, was that for the province or just that area?
It was vague. It might have been just lower mainland. It wasn't clear.
The stats currently for the province, and there is some breakdown by area, but it's actually quite high. It's I think as of right now, it's just approaching 300. Mm-hmm. And the majority of those will be in the lower mainland. The issue of So that's for kill stats by the Conservation Officer Service. So not including a rancher, say, shooting a bear because it was on his property or something like this effect. I'm just referring to government kills, are right around the 300 mark right now. So it's quite substantial, and it's very high. Including June, for an example, there was 10 grizzly bears killed by government staff as well, which is a record high for the month of June. So there is a pattern here of an increase of government sanctioned killing and an increase of kills by government officers. The number of sightings and the number of complaints about wildlife is an interesting phenomenon, and I do refer to it as a phenomenon because we have multiple social factors that are going into this statistic of and allegation of an increase of sightings and conflict over time. And one of them is, when we boil it down, a root cause issue is actually the technology we're using to report that we have sightings. The Conservation Officer Service call line or complaint line, which is called here in BC the RAP line, mm-hmm. is kind of a 911 for animal issues. It has been consistently over time since its establishment in 2011, I believe, receiving consistently year after year higher and higher call volumes. And the Conservation Officer Service uses this as a justification for more funding, more officers. We're getting more calls for service over time. But what we're not stopping to realize is the government is spending more money every year advertising that number and advertising that system of complaint. So this concept that sightings are increasing over time, it's a bit of a fallacy. The public's knowledge of how to report a wildlife sighting is being actively by government staff and marketing programs campaigned on in how to complain about these sightings. And there, a part of this government marketing strategy is also an element of fear. If you see an animal, you must report it. It could be a public safety risk. And so these factors, this fear factor, coupled with active marketing of the number in the complaint system, is a root cause of why these statistics over time are increasing. So it's not true that there is an increase of conflict over time. What is true is there is an increase of a report of sightings due to active marketing and fear factors. And those are two different things.
Well, that all makes good sense. So now that needs to be said in the media when they're citing all these numbers that have doubled since last year. There's a reason for that. It's just because the data is being reported better. So when I hear of city human residents citing dangerous wildlife in urban areas, it can be a difficult decision to make as to whether to report it to the conservation office or not to report it at all. We know that if conservation officers are called in, the animal may very well wind up getting shot to death, but if we did nothing, humans may get hurt. What is the balance here, and what is a solution that you suggest in this scenario? And can you talk about how prevention can be imposed or encouraged among citizens by keeping bear deterrents locked up in a way that is actually what is driving them to come into the spaces where humans live?
It's a good question, and I think the short answer is there is no easy answer. But at the end of the day, the responsibility lies not with the Conservation Officer Service, but with each of us. And it lies with us not only to ensure that we are educated about our wildlife in our shared spaces, but also that we are educated enough to know what is a reasonable public safety risk and what is not. And when there are issues of government officers exceeding what would be a reasonable response, that as citizens, we also hold our government accountable to a reasonableness in these circumstances. So I talked about this issue of a fear factor and this issue of marketing fear, basically, we also have people, as a result of urban expansion and an increase in recreation activity, we have people where we haven't historically had them in wildlife habitat. And understanding that is also very important. As our communities expand, there is attractants where there haven't been attractants before. We are encroaching on wildlife habitat on an annual basis. And so understanding what our human impacts are and being responsible not only to ourselves but each other, and also being willing to hold our governments accountable for reasonable actions, I think is very important. And one of the areas of reasonableness and due diligence that we're not currently doing enough in my view, is prevention. We have a very reactive response to these call volumes and public sightings, and it's a very highly charged, intense environment where we're sending officers out into the field to respond to this perceived or legitimate public safety risk, and we're telling the public that they should be afraid, so they should call us, and then we're telling our officers that they have a job to go protect the public, and it creates this a very unhealthy dynamic in my mind that results in fairly extensive and in some cases very inappropriate deaths of wildlife.
Now, I understand there's a $345 fine, actually, for residents in bear neighborhoods not securing their garbage. I remember as a child growing up in Port Hardy, where I know you worked, we had to build a secure place where the bears wouldn't be able to come up and access the garbage, because that's why they're coming into the town, and because they want to be fed easily. So from what I understand, this fine isn't being enforced. It's not being given out enough. Do you think that this would be a great way to prevent these unfortunate incidents happening where the bears end up losing their lives because they came to get someone's garbage that wasn't secure?
Attracting wildlife, and it's an unfortunate term. It's a term that's in the Wildlife Act, but bears have been determined under our legislation as dangerous wildlife, and I despise that term myself, but nevertheless, that's what we're stuck with in our Wildlife Act right now. So under the Wildlife Act, it's an offense to attract dangerous wildlife to your premises or land. The job of a conservation officer service is to enforce our provincial legislation. And so from a preventative aspect, it is their job to prevent those offenses from occurring. However, what we see right now is a major focus on reactive responses to sightings and complaints, and a minor focus on prevention, fining, and public education. In fact, the conservation officer says that they rely on WildSafe BC to do public education. Well, that's quite problematic when you're ultimately the agency that's, mm-hmm. that's doing all the killing as well. You would think that if it was true that conservation officers don't want to kill wildlife and don't like to kill wildlife, you would think that there would be more of a proactive approach to ensuring that that was minimized. And it's just not the case.
That's really messed up there. You know, we could go on more talking about that, but we only have 1 minute left, and I just wanted to leave our listeners with some of your observations. You worked in the Conservation Service for years on Vancouver Island, so I know that means you must have a lot of experience with observing and interacting with bears in the wild. From your unique place and perspective, what would you like to share with our listeners about the lives of these wild beings and why they should be respected and appreciated rather than so quickly extinguished if they come out to find food where people live or are visiting? We just have about 40 seconds here for a last answer, please.
I think it's our responsibility as government officers and as citizens in this province to expect wildlife. And if we have the responsibility to expect wildlife, then we also have the responsibility to ourselves be informed. That goes for our officers and our citizens. and being informed and educating ourselves about our local wildlife and what to expect and how to interact with our wildlife and how to keep ourselves and our wildlife safe is each an individual responsibility. And that includes our officers and our government staff.
Well, thank you, Bryce, for coming on the show today to speak with us about safety issues in urban areas where both humans and non-human wild animals live, such as bears, and where they cross paths with humans. If you would like to learn more about Bryce's current campaign to raise court trial funds for the three Coquitlam citizens who were arrested with obstruction for trying to save three bears in their community from being killed, take a look at the GoFundMe page at the top of our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. There is a link to it as well on our website at animalvoices.org. Thanks for sharing this important information with us today, Bryce, and I wish you a good weekend.
Okay, thanks, Allison. You have a good afternoon.
Great, thanks.
You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Join us here again next Friday, August 30th at noon for a more informative animal-friendly programming.
For a surprise.
Oh,
I've been told.
Right, yeah. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website, animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows and download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at Animal Voices Vancouver and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We are also currently looking for volunteers to help with producing and hosting shows, website maintenance, social media, and more. If you have any of these skills or a willingness to learn and you're passionate about animal advocacy, send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or a Facebook message at Animal Voices Vancouver. Training will be provided. And now we'll leave you with a song. In keeping with the theme of our feature interview, this is a piece by Phil Collins and Mark Mancina from the soundtrack to the film Brother Bear, entitled Wilderness of Danger and Beauty. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.